This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV nationwide and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates. It's been 10 years since the subprime mortgage crisis kicked off the Great Recession, when a massive housing bubble burst in the United States, leaving behind untold numbers of Americans stripped of their homes and even livelihoods. While politicians should have taken steps to ensure that such a thing never happened again, we are seeing now the rise of a troubling trend with echoes of the subprime mortgage crisis. There are increasing numbers of so-called contract for deed financial transactions that leave homebuyers deeply vulnerable. Writing about this new trend in The Guardian newspaper is Chuck Collins, who identifies Wall Street private equity firms as the villains in this troubling new phenomenon. Chuck Collins is a senior scholar at the Institute for Policy Studies, where he directs the program on inequality and the common good. He's written a number of books, including 99 to 1, How Wealth Inequality is Wrecking the World and What We Can Do About It, as well as Born on Third Base, A One Percenter Makes the Case for Tackling Inequality, Bringing Wealth Home, and Committing to the Common Good. He's a frequent guest on our program. Welcome back, Chuck.
Hi, Sonali. Thank you for having me.
So I mentioned a new phenomenon, but really, as you point out in your piece in The Guardian, it's not really new. What is this contract for deed type transaction? And what does it have its historical origins in?
Well, maybe starting with the historic origins, if you think about after World War II, there was this huge publicly financed effort to expand home ownership, but it pretty much left Blacks and Latinos and other people of color out of it. And it pushed more people into a kind of a predatory market. And we're talking now the 50s, 1960s, and where instead of getting a traditional mortgage, people acquired a house through something called contract for deed or rent to buy. And it was basically a contract that gave them kind of the downside of being a tenant, meaning, you know, you own it, Sonali. If something goes wrong, if the sink breaks, it's your responsibility. You're a homeowner, but you actually won't build any equity until you make your last payment. And if you miss any payments along the way, you will be evicted and you'll lose whatever wealth and money you put into the house.
So you don't get the title to the house till the very last payment?
That's right. The deed would formally pass to you after you've fulfilled the contract. And so it was a way in which landlords would sort of churn their properties, knowing, you know, first they would sell the properties, usually overpriced, without an appraisal, without an inspection, and in a way that kind of set people up to fail. And so people would lose their house after some payments, and they would be stripped of the equity that they put into it. So the happy history is people organized, particularly in Chicago, formed this group called the Contract Buyers League. And through great community organizing in neighborhoods like Lawndale, they put pressure on these landlords to renegotiate the terms of these contracts to make them into more real mortgages. And they also passed laws just outlawing some of these practices. So we thought that this kind of, you know, these kind of predatory deals were long gone. But what we've discovered is that they're back. And it's instead of these sort of mom and pop landlords, now it's these giant private equity Wall Street firms that bought up all these foreclosed properties. So you described the subprime mortgage crisis. Well, tens of thousands of people lost their houses. And these big private equity firms bought them up in blocks by the thousand. And now they're turning around, and I wouldn't use the word selling, but they're entering into transactions with people just like these contract for deed mortgages from the 60s and 70s.
So not only do these kinds of contracts prey on people in the similar way to those who were victims of the subprime mortgage crisis, this has literally risen from the ashes of the subprime mortgage crisis. I mean, these companies took advantage of the foreclosures from the subprime mortgage crisis to bring this new kind of predatory practice back into being. Wow.
Exactly. It's like the vampire has risen up again. And in this case, you think about it, these private equity, they have thousands of units that are in terrible shape for the most part. So what do you do with them? Well, you can't actually sell them as houses because to sell a house, the systems have to work. If you want to get somebody to lend you a mortgage, a lender, any kind of real lender is going to require an inspection. They want to make sure it isn't overpriced, so there's going to be an appraisal. But if you do this contract for deed maneuver, then you sort of skirt around the truth in lending laws and around the protections that exist for homeowners, but you also bypass the protections for tenants. So I can't rent you a house that doesn't have a functioning system, but technically I could sell it to you, and I could sell it to you with this contract for deed. So they are kind of using the fact that these properties are in this transaction is sort of in a no man's land between being a tenant and being a homeowner, and yet all the risk goes on to this onto these buyers.
Are buyers today aware of what they are getting into when they sign these contracts, or are many of them under the impression that they're buying a house?
I found it both, and actually, I went out with a group in Detroit and spent a couple days door knocking in some of these neighborhoods. And by the way, a lot of these are in the Rust Belt communities that had high levels of foreclosure. Think Ohio, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and I would knock, and people would. Some people thought that they were getting title. They thought that they got title. Others, this was the best deal they could get. Like they were having a hard time, maybe. Even renting a home, and this enabled them to at least have property. And they and one guy said, "Well, this is the gamble I'm taking,"
Right. And in fact,
and
a
he
lot
went.
of one of the things that happened after the subprime mortgage crisis was that the rules for lending became stricter, which effectively shut out a lot of people with poor credit out of the home buying market altogether.
Yes, exactly. So what we're dealing with are credit-starved communities where banks have kind of withdrawn now. They were lending, they were doing these subprime mortgages. They stopped that practice or they've changed that practice. And now these community, someone wanting to buy a house in Youngstown, Ohio, isn't going to be able to get a mortgage from a traditional lender. So they're sort of pushed into this. And they walk along, and they see a sign, and it says rent to buy, or you could own this house. And they call a number down in South Carolina and they get a number for a lockbox. So there isn't even a representative in person showing up to show you the house. They go in and look at it. They don't necessarily have an experienced inspector along to say, look, the system isn't working. This electrical system is not functioning. And so people, but they're, want to own a home. They aspire to own a home. And so they enter into this transaction. They get a sheaf of paper, they get a deed in it, and they sign the bottom line. And they don't realize that they actually won't own the title. They won't get that title till they make that final payment.
And then, what happens if they miss a payment? If they miss one payment, does the company that's essentially what leasing this home to them simply take it back? Do they ever get back any of the money they've put into the home?
Well, in the bad old days in Chicago's Lawndale, literally, they had none of the protections that homeowners have. Actually, homeowners have some protections when their property goes into a foreclosure process, they can redeem it. In this case, they technically don't own the process. They're like tenants, or it's like you bought a car and it's getting repossessed. It's a forfeiture. So technically, they can take that property. And I met a guy, Adrian Hamilton, in Chicago. He bought the house, or he got the contract for deed to purchase the transaction, if you will, and he suddenly realized he had to put a lot of money just to make this house livable. So he put in a bunch of his own money to make the house livable, and now he's trying to keep up with these payments. But he knows now if he misses one of those payments, he's going to lose his $1,000 down payment. He's going to lose the $10,000 he put in to repair it. He could lose all that equity, could be stripped away.
Who are the companies that are involved? Let's start naming names. You say private equity, Wall Street firms. What does that mean? Are these that are companies that have been in the business of home selling, or rather home, loans, or is this something new that they've entered into? How big are these firms?
Some of them are just new creations that came out of the subprime. There's Harbor Portfolio Advisors is one of the larger firms. There's a group called Vision Property. out of South Carolina. There's a group called Apollo Capital out of St. Louis. Battery Point Financial. These are four or five examples of these are private equity firms that got into the business of buying up all those foreclosed buildings. So, and many times they create subsidiaries and slice and dice it. But when I was in Detroit again and also in Ohio, you would see, call Vision Property and you'd call down to South Carolina, or you can go on their website and look at the inventory of properties, and they explain this is a contract for deed or a rent to buy arrangement. A couple of the things that are sort of scandalous. One is that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac sold these properties, thousands of these properties, to these actors.
Right, I was going to ask
And
you, how
now,
did they manage to buy them in the first place? They were
well, Fannie Mae created what they called the bulk buying program. And again, they're under
The
pressure from
bulk
Congress on
buying
tax.
program, like as if you go to Costco and buy a bunch of toilet paper.
Exactly. You could buy it by the hundred. And that's what they did. They were
Wow.
under pressure from Congress, to move these properties, so they did that. But they weren't really looking at what's the plan for resale. They were just trying to get back money. One of the challenges is who has jurisdiction here? A lot of local property law is state and local. There's the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. Is looking into these practices. Members of Congress are pressuring them. We know they're also under pressure from the Trump administration that's threatening to shut them down. So you have a federal agency that should be protecting consumers and should be outlawing some of these practices. In the gap, you have states like Illinois that are now looking to pass legislation to outlaw some of these practices. The city of Cincinnati has taken Harbor Portfolio to court to sue them over these practices. So it's a pl unfortunately, it's sort of a patchwork, and it's not clear like who has the power to fix this.
You, in your article, refer to the phrase loan sharks. That's a strong phrase. Why are these companies, why do you characterize them as loan sharks? I mean, this is a kind of practice that the term loan shark invokes something that we thought we had mostly done away with in the United States.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a unfortunately, the history of real estate is a history where wealthy and powerful actors have used their power to extract wealth and strip wealth from low-income people and communities. I mean, that is, and this is sort of the latest mutation of that. I should also be clear, the Trump administration is trying to shut down the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, so they're not trying to help the situation. They're trying to the whatever weak federal enforcement is there, they want to get rid of Richard Cordroy, the head of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, which was, created under Dodd-Frank. It was the campaign of Elizabeth Warren before she was a senator to create this Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. And hopefully that would be the cop on the beat that would protect us from credit card scams and from these kind of arrangements. So it's worrisome that they haven't really stepped in to address this particular form of loan sharks.
And Chuck, when we began our conversation, we talked about the fact that people who wanted to buy homes but who were left out of that process decades ago, half a century ago, were primarily people of color. Is that who is also primarily targeted these days? Do you find, or from your research, have you found that low-income people of color are once more the sort of primary victims of these predatory practices?
It looks to be the case, although what's happened, one difference is instead of targeting neighborhoods, these foreclosed properties are all over the place. Some of them are in sort of exurban communities. Some of them are in traditional white neighborhoods or Appalachian neighborhoods. So we're knocking on doors and finding all kinds of folks who are being scammed by these credit, these rent-to-buy arrangements. So they're not as targeted to, say, like the Lawndale neighborhood in Chicago, like the first wave. But the National Consumer Law Federation is primary is saying, look, it looks like they're basically back in the same neighborhoods, exploiting the same people less than 10 years later.
And so, what are the efforts? I mean, if while we're waiting for the Consumer Finance Protection Bureau to come in and actually do something about this, are you seeing consumer groups be able to, leverage collectively and fight these folks? Are there any lawsuits on the horizon to stop this kind of practice?
Yeah, I mean, there's some grassroots organizing. There's a group called Home Savers, which is trying to kind of draw attention to this, and has been visiting different communities and just trying to understand kind of what's going on. There are attorney generals in several states, including Illinois and in Michigan, that are looking into these practices. The city of Cincinnati, I mentioned. But at this point, we're still sort of drumming up a recognition that this is a problem, and it is significant that the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau has subpoenaed Harbor Financial, and Vision Property, some of those groups, to look into their practices. That Fannie Mae has decided not to sell bulk properties, but it's a little late for that since they already moved thousands and thousands of them out there. But it's important that you and I are having this conversation because if people are seeing this happen, they should contact groups like the National Consumer Law Federation and groups like that that are kind of looking in and trying to map this and trying to better understand what the dynamics are.
Well, Chuck, where can people find out more about all of this? You've written about it on The Guardian. Are there other places you can recommend, or is this still such a sort of new trend that there hasn't been as much work done on it yet? I mean, I imagine it would be wonderful to get some studies showing comprehensively who's being targeted, what's happening to people who have become trapped in these practices.
Yeah, I think we're at the early stage. One thing is, if people visit inequality.org, you'll see there's a piece, the Guardian piece, but I also did a longer investigative piece for the American Prospect, and we also put up a clip. It's 20 years old, but it's from a documentary called Blacks and Jews by two terrific filmmakers, Alan Snitow and Deborah Kaufman, and they tell the story of the Contract Buyers League in this documentary. So you can find those things at inequality.org, and I'll send them so you can put them up as well.
I'd love that. Thank you so much, Chuck, as always, for joining us. We'll post a link to your Guardian piece from our website.
Thanks, Sonali.
Chuck Collins is a senior scholar at the Institute for Policy Studies, where he directs the program on inequality and the common good. And we've been discussing his latest article in The Guardian. It's called Loan Sharks Were Meant to Be Eradicated, Now They're Back. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.